This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
All right, welcome back. This is the second week. We are covering buying strategy, first-day MLS buying. We're covering, we're redoing the buying systems course that we've done. It's about 24 different buying strategies, 2 days of information. By the time we're done over the summer, it'll end up probably being closer to 3 days. And we're covering first-day buying out of the MLS, how it's changed, the technology. And last week, we ended on quadrant two, which is in a down cycle. So what did we say the year was? The down cycle, sort of this quadrant?
This quadrant, which started in 2007, okay, and then 2008 in earnest.
Okay, yeah.
And by the way, that's important to realize in advance that it's coming.
Oh, yeah.
Because you start getting all your anchor people on your team when they're not busy.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they get slammed and they have, 800 listings instead of eight. And you're the guy.
Yeah. And that's, and a change in the MLS is so different in the players. So in quadrant one, we talked about investors just start keeping an eye out or go back to the people that were doing the REOs possibly in the last cycle. It's likely that they're going to be picking up the torch and doing it again. And so we're here in quadrant two, talking about the first day MLS. So now it's during the downturn. So a lot of what you're seeing are the short sales MLS and the, God forbid, there'd be equity sellers that, in your experience, is it just they're overlisting, just dreaming at this point?
That's very true. If we're talking about an 08 market, they were still in an 06 mentality.
I would have hated to deal with equity sellers in that market. That would have been really painful.
Actually, dealing with lenders wasn't any easier. They could not accept the fact that they were going to lose more than 50% of their loan. And you could see the journey of a listing. It was ridiculous. I mean, some of the properties I bought, they started, 360 loan started at 299, and they thought, oh, that's a good deal. 199.
Right.
And nothing happened. Mm-hmm. 159, and nothing happened. And you could just methodically see they had a pattern. Like every month they would revisit it and go, oh my God, we got to do it again. And they would lower it another 50 grand and get nothing. It was really interesting to watch that journey.
You know what? I didn't even think about this. The landscape of the people involved in the business really changed as well. So, I mean, it was a running joke that everybody was quitting their jobs to become a realtor in 06 because everything they touched, they didn't have to do anything and they made, thousands of dollars. And then all of a sudden the downturn happens. They realize they don't have any skills or relationships. So they disappear. The investors who were speculators disappear. So what you had left were people who didn't know any better because they were brand new. So they didn't have any preconceived notions of what it should be or shouldn't be. And then the realtors, in your experience, Andrea, was it just the realtors who'd been around and maybe the new guys, or the new guys disappeared and be like, this is a horrible time to be a realtor?
I think in 08, when we're talking about 08, I think the banks realistically thought they were just going to get rid of their inventory in about a 24-month period, and they absolutely flooded the market. I mean, when I was working the REOs, we would open what we had, this platform called Equator, and we would have tasks on Equator, and they would be in green, yellow. You never wanted red. Red was bad. And we would just wake up in a morning and have 50 new green tasks.
Oh my gosh.
And those tasks consisted of checking the property, doing BPOs, doing monthly marketing reports. And banks just really weren't realistic at that time on what they were going to really sell those properties for. They did get realistic afterwards. And as Bruce was saying, there would be one house listed at 200 and then a bank would do a BPO and list the next door neighbor at 150. And that's really what we were seeing in 2008.
The other thing that happened to the agents is there was a lot of oversight that was not physical contact with a human being. It was a methodology mm-hmm. and a computerization. And they stopped listening to people that knew you're crazy. In other words, you shouldn't be listing this property. I got called by REO agents saying, you please make me a ridiculous offer so I can beat the heck up out of the lender. They needed to get jarred because they were asking something that would never happen. And what happened was the agents were getting graded. So you would have Mike Novak Smith getting listings taken from him, let's say, because he didn't sell them. So he got a bad grade, and handing them to Steve Silva, who's about to get a bad grade because the price is still bad.
Right.
I mean, there wasn't anything you'd do. I mean, everything was in a free fall. We were trying to buy and sell properties at the time, and we were having to calculate what's our hold time and reduce the listing price by 3 or 4% a month.
Yeah,
that was like a rock just going boop.
Craig did an amazing job with that. That was such a hard market to flip in, and he still made it work.
Yes.
That was pretty awful. So as far as the first day MLS, it's important to note that the investor who they're up against, you've got somebody like a Mike Novak Smith who went from 0 to 60 in a matter of you know, a year. So having that many listings at one time and the carrying costs, that's the other fascinating thing. Oh. You know, the talk was like, what if one of these banks go under and I'm carrying over $100,000 worth of utility bills, trash, you know, I mean, that's insane. It's not like they were front loading like, oh, hey, thanks for the listing. Here's $20,000 to handle all the fees.
That's correct. We had to bill to get reimbursed for everything.
Yeah,
that was the 08 market. They got a little bit smarter in about 10 where they started having a lot of outside companies. But in 08, the agents were really responsible for everything. We fronted everything, the utilities, the pool person, the gardener, cash for keys, and yes.
And if they didn't have you on the ground, they could also have the great benefit of being fined every day by whatever city you were in.
Right. We dealt with a lot of properties that they fined us for dead yards. Riverside made a lot of money back then for dead yards.
Yep. I've seen some of those fines. Negotiated some of those fines. Yeah, that's pretty dangerous. So putting the realtor hat on, you've got all these investors hitting you up when you're just slammed. Is there any good way to do that at that point with the technology in place, knowing that, you know, at certain periods of time, they had very little control. It was just a numbers game.
I think for 08 and 09, you know, we had some really great asset managers and they would call. They wanted feedback back then. They would say, you know, I got your BPO, you know, why are you bringing it in at this? You know, why do you think we need to so substantially cut this? And at that time, they were kind of looking at what their appraised value was at the time that they had sold the property. And they would ask, you know, how can we have this house in Moreno Valley at $300,000 and it's a two-bedroom in Moreno Valley at $300,000? And you just want to say, because you never should have had a $300,000 two-bedroom house in Moreno Valley.
With the car parked on the lawn.
Yeah. Exactly. And it took them about a year. And then the asset managers really, I think, became pretty receptive of understanding that we were here knowing what was going on. And if they wanted their property sold, that they really did need to read our BPOs and to listen to our comments. And it was a great about 2 years. And then things changed in 10. That's when the robo-signing started. And that's a whole different...
The MERS stuff. Okay.
Yeah, that started.
So if you were an investor, first day, you get a notification out of the MLS that there's this listing. And it's priced decently. Is there anything you can do to get that deal? I mean, I know we're going after the relationship, but doing your due diligence and you're seeing a lot of properties, trying to go inside from the realtor standpoint, is there anything you think that investors could have done better or not done to...
I'll tell you one thing that most people completely ignored, myself included, was the auto emails. Oh, I see you just listed this property. I'm an investor. I'd like to buy it. Call me. Okay, we're just not going to respond to those emails.
Oh, thank you so much.
You know, especially
you have an automated response. No.
And you know, the other one, of course, is you know, they would the house would be listed for, like your dad said, $60,000, and we'd get an offer for $20,000, and we'd be just like, you really can't want us to present that to our bank. I mean, you know, we have to be a little bit realistic here. And there is a process to that. I mean, asset managers will listen to you as an agent if you have a good track record of moving their property. You know, that's... And the other thing about investors is, you know, when we call an asset manager and say, you know, Mr. Norris is, you know, this is like his 12th one that he's bought from us this month, he'll close. You know, back then in 08, we were able to get asset managers to listen to us and they had a little bit of power and influence to be able to take Bruce's offer because it was all about getting him off the books.
Mm. And if you're on the investor side, you're thinking, okay, how do I make this offer stronger than anybody else's? And so, you know, that's what you're thinking is, okay, I'm now looking it through the eyes of a seller. If they're going to do this price, they just want it to close.
Correct.
And so you just have to make that a no-brainer. So when you get an offer, maybe, especially if you're trying to tie up a relationship, I'm paying cash. Here's my deposit is $63,000. The purchase price is $60,000. It's the closing cost too. I'll get a check back. It's in the form of a cashier's check. Mm-hmm. It's over.
That's correct.
Now, then that's a good story. So is it helpful to be first out of the gate? If it's listed on the MLS, within 24 hours, an investor has seen it, told the story to you of what needs to be done and come in with all cash. Does that make a difference?
I think when you're talking about the 2008, 2009 market, mm-hmm. I think that you did have opportunities to be first because banks were trying to liquidate property. They were wanting them off of the books. They weren't wanting them sitting there. So it's a different story now.
Okay. Well, let's just get into that. So I think we've beat up the downturn. So now we've got
So you're in
three.
Quadrant two, you're dealing with a really motivated seller.
Right.
Okay.
So now we go into three, which is sort of like another semi-short period of time where we've hit the bottom and we're sort of flattening out. first day MLS listings come out and maybe there's more options. It's so we're maybe going from a buyer's market to a little bit more of a balance with the seller's market. So how does it change? You just said that. So
it's, well, that's subtle. If you're in three, you don't even know it occurred until you look back. So like 99, you look back and go, oh, we didn't go down this year. It's not like stark.
Oh, I guess that's true.
It's just blah.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you start to see, usually it's construction that starts, and that brings in the migration of construction workers. And all of a sudden, we get off to the races and a little higher and a little higher, and off we go. So for an investor to understand what to do in quadrant three, you can really do well, because if you have had dirt through quadrant two, you are the loneliest person in the world. No one has called you to say, can I buy your lot? No one said, can I take the tax bill away from you so I can mow the weeds for 5 years?
Right.
Okay, so quadrant three is one of those, if you have charts that say, okay, that's over. But if you're a landholder, it's not over for you. You're still mowing the weeds and no hope of having an out of that expense. That's a perfect time to option dirt, because you know, okay, I'm going to be able to use this stuff in a few years, and I'm going to buy this stuff for nothing, because it is worth nothing. It doesn't pencil.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So that's why the quadrant system is kind of cool, because you're always doing the right thing in advance of when it's worth something. So try that in quadrant four. Everyone that has dirt goes, oh my God, this is so great.
So, well, in the scope of the first day MLS, the realtor, what you sort of hinted that something changed. So you were talking about being first could matter in 08. When did it change?
Yeah, I think in 08, again, we had a lot of motivated banks who were wanting to liquidate their inventory, and they wanted to work with investors that were going to close. You know, when it started changing was when the market started improving. And then people were, you know, I don't really need to take the first offer.
Okay.
Well, you're 97% sellers that own stuff that have equity too.
Correct.
So it doesn't mean there's not motivated private sellers. It means there's less of them. There's not the dominant number of percentage of REOs or anything. So now it's going to be the isolated case of somebody that's got equity that wants to sell. And I think what we had touched on maybe off air was that it's gone to a point where a lot of that's going to happen. It's going to get double ended though. So
the double ending cycle.
So you still have that first day motivated seller, but now it's being contained by somebody that says, I already have the investor. I'm going to flip this and earn both sides of it. And so that's still there. It just may not be the same methodology that I'll go to the MLS and find a deal. No, it's where you start. As a matter of fact, one of the things you ought to do, you ought to pull comps and see how whatever went pending in a day or two was priced right. That's the agent I'm going to call and say, this is what I do.
Okay.
I'm going to try and I'm going to work my way into number two position. I know I'm not going to get to be number one yet until I get a chance. And when you get a chance, then you pour it on. And so how you pour it on, you make an offer. And if you can do it, you write an all cash offer and there's the cash. It's sitting there.
Right.
And all of a sudden the agent goes, I like this guy better, man. It's easier. And you can slide into number one because that's what they want. They just want an easy transaction.
Okay.
The other thing is the reputation part has legs. Remember, we did a transaction. It was in Norco, I think, where didn't we have a room addition underneath, a septic tank underneath a room addition? And a call was never made to the REO agent to complain. It just, it wasn't. It's not what you do.
Your dad just jackhammered up the floor and didn't tell me. Oh. And then I walked in and we had this big pile of dirt.
It was like earth was inside a house.
Oh, no.
A mound of earth that was 7 feet, 6 inches high. And remember, it was pending? Yes. And the young couple brought their folks in to see what they're buying.
Oh, no.
Whoops.
But your dad is touching on something like that happened last year. We had an REO that we had purchased during the summer. We rehabbed it. It had a skylight and a bathroom. And I bought this house. There was 20 offers on it. And I went, met the agent, introduced myself, sat and talked to him for like 15, 20 minutes. Mine wasn't the highest offer. But because I had gone out, done my due diligence, established a relationship with this agent, and he was new in the business. He also happened to be an attorney that worked with seniors. And that's who owned this house. And that's how I ended up buying that property, because he just felt like I was going to do what I said. We did close. But my point of that was the skylight ended up leaking after they closed escrow. And the agent posted something on Facebook about this skylight leaking. And so I called her and I said, why didn't you call me about the skylight leaking? And she said, why would I call you? And I said, because I'll take care of it for you. We didn't know it was going to leak. You know, we bought it during the summer.
The assumption is that you weren't going to.
Exactly. And she was shocked. And we sent our people out there. We replaced the skylight for them. We fixed the drywall. That, you know, whatever cost us, a couple thousand dollars, made for the best relationship for that agent and for those people, because we took care of them. And that's what's really important being an investor. It's not just when you close the house. It's what happens after you close as well. And agents remember that.
Yeah. By the way, you sold Piedmont. I heard that the owner knows us. You went over there to check that it didn't flood?
Yeah. They had a really heavy rain. Remember, we had fixed that.
Yeah.
But it had been a while since we had a really heavy rain. So after it closed, I don't know how long it was, but I went over there and his wife was going, really?
Who are you and why are you here?
But that's important. And that's what's going to create longevity as an investor for you, is not only how you treat the agents on the front end, but how you treat the agents and the people that buy the house on the back end.
And because I know Andrea, this is who she is. And it's important. It's not like a technique. Mm-hmm. It's just who you might as well end up being in business, because it's the only way you survive and have long-term relationships, is that you're honorable. You might as well just say, you know, that's who I'm going to be in business, because I need to be to have a successful referral base, because they already know what to expect. That's what everyone wants to know. If it hits the fan, it's going to be okay.
Right. So going back to your, first day MLS, is there still are opportunities on the first day MLS. It really is how you present yourself to that offer, or to that agent, excuse me, when you want to write your offer.
I'm glad we're talking about this, because even I think a lot of people would write this off because of technology. Oh, you're not going to be first. It's not fax and printed papers. We still have the terrible edges on the side anymore.
Correct.
I'm glad it's taken this turn, because I don't think reading the chapter of how to do this, it necessarily reads the relationship as deep as it needs to be, especially now. So let's move on to quadrant four. So we're in quadrant four. It's definitely a seller's market. You know, if you've got a good property listed at a decent price, it's going to get beat up. But again, you've got investors. Are they writing offers without seeing it more oftentimes than not?
Well, you keep talking about technology, and that's what I will say for quadrant four, is investors, and especially new investors, will write dozens of offers based on what they see on the internet. They don't go see the property.
Zillow says this, though.
Well, Zillow does say that. and that is one of the biggest problems, because they will write offers that they haven't done their numbers. They're writing over what the property really is going to be worth once they fix it up to flip it. Mm-hmm. And then they go see the property and then they go, oh my gosh, we didn't know it didn't have a kitchen, or that it backed up to the freeway, or that the bathroom was completely gone, or this room addition has mold and we need to tear it down. And then they want to renegotiate. And that is what makes agents mad, because mm-hmm. they have, you know, accepted their offer, they've accepted the terms, and then they go and view the property and want to renegotiate the offer.
And we ought to mention that in quadrant four, there's really not a suggestion that the first day MLS be one of your lead buying systems.
No, not right. at all. Yeah. Okay. No, this is going to have been the course, and we specifically want to sort of capture this history of how it changes over time and how technology has changed. Okay. So, no, this is good. So,
but you also want to realize, as a buyer, what happens is you're in quadrant two and you have all these foreclosures. That's a skill set.
Yep.
It's a relationship driven. How can I get this person to say, okay, this is a valuable team member and we're going to do that for 5 years? When you get to quadrant four, you're dealing usually with an owner directly mm-hmm. off of a mailer or a sign. Completely different skill set. And, you know, the MLS is taking a back seat. So as an investor, the whole idea of the buying system is to say, okay, let me look at a set of charts so I can figure out how to best use my day tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. So in quadrant four, because you've thought about this after quadrant two, maybe you own 30 building lots or a Rosamond project because you tied it up when no one wanted dirt and you got to build it at the peak of quadrant four. So that's what you're thinking about in quadrant three, is how I'm going to cash this in, when it's all about, do you have inventory instead of, are you trying to get a deal out of the MLS? You would like to be presenting inventory to the MLS at that point.
Right.
Because you've thought about the process that's going to happen in quadrant four.
And when people call in and tell me that they're working sort of the MLS in general, that's a conversation we have. I'm like, well, what's your angle? Like, are you going after stuff with hair on it? Like, where nobody's bidding because there's some real reasons, whether it's mold or a cracked slab. If they're new, I'm like, is that appropriate for you? Do you have a background? So yeah, that's definitely.
And in quadrant four, the answer is that's the only opportunity you're going to get the big discounts, is that it doesn't have
right.
anything that can get financing, and maybe an expandable structure to where you're in a county that goes for $800 a foot and it's a 900 square foot structure, and most right. of the houses there are 2,500 square feet. That's perfect.
Yeah, and that changes by city too. You really have to make sure you. There's a lot of cities locking it down.
They even want you to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Pasadena, LA. I know several markets who don't want McMansions anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. So quadrant four MLS. There's limited inventory. So this is very relationship driven, and the people you make relationships are with just very different. So, a lot of the stuff isn't even hitting the MLS. The stuff that we're buying, I still do see short sales and REOs come through the lending division, but. You know, just not as often.
Right.
Short sales, REOs. And
right. It becomes a smaller piece.
Yeah, smaller and smaller. You know, let's drop this here. I still get a lot of questions on whether it's valuable or not to get the sales agent's license in this quadrant in general. I like the education piece of it, especially if somebody's new, has no background in real estate. I like having the three courses. I think it's very helpful. But the risk, everybody's so worried about the risk involved. You've had your license since when?
Since the day I opened the Norse Group, so 95, every conversation that I've ever had to deal with that are you licensed, I interpret that question as, are you trying to get a listing? Mm. And so that was the question I would answer. I would say, I have a license as a realtor, as an appraiser, and I don't want to appraise your house or list it. What I want to do is hear what your situation is and see if I can help you get to the finish line. If I'm part of it, that's great. And so that's how we started. But usually I never had somebody hang up because I had a license. If I explained it, I'm not interested in the listing.
Okay.
I saw a fantastic sign, by the way, just recently.
What's that?
It was a sign where you normally say, we buy fixer uppers.
Mm-hmm.
It was a broker sign that said, we help people that own fixer uppers.
That's a good sign.
That is a great sign.
I haven't even really seen those.
Yeah.
That's a good angle.
It is a great angle. I mean, really, it is a great angle because you're going to get the guy that's fixing them up and you may get the guy that has one.
I've heard of a realtor in San Diego that she does the contracting work and somehow figures out a cost share with the seller.
Okay.
They're willing to front the money to do the repairs.
Right.
Pretty interesting. So back to the question about the sales agent. Have you had problems wearing both hats as a flipper or an agent?
You know, it's interesting because as a realtor, I like people to know that I'm still a realtor.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about an end user who either is going to list their house or buy a house. But as far as an investor, I don't really ever have an issue because I make it very clear when I'm contacting the agent that I'm not contacting them because I want to write the offer.
Oh, right. You're not getting the commission.
Right. Yeah. I make it very clear that I don't want to represent myself, that I want them to represent me, and that I'm just disclosing to them that, by the way, I just happen to have a real estate license.
But that's not why I'm calling you.
Yeah, you don't want to wear the commission hat and the equity hat at the same time.
To me, if you want to be an investor, it's never about the commission. And Bruce taught me that, too, on selling our flips. Mm. I had someone contact me a couple months ago that asked me if I would list their flips for 1%. And I just said, you know, you really need to find another agent.
Yeah.
But I said to him, I'm going to give you some free advice. If you're trying to put together a team as a flipper and a property investor, treat your people right. And trying to ask someone to sell for 1% is not treating your people right.
Yeah. You'll get replaced by somebody that'll do it for 0.75%, but then they're going to get what they paid for. That's the short-sightedness of what I see going on. A lot of things happened in the early 90s. I met you, and all of a sudden we go to auctions. We're buying six houses at a day, and we're sitting there, and I needed Craig. Well, I didn't want to have to invent the money wheel. And I, you know, it was just one of those things where you realize, gosh, Craig is there, and my money's going to fund. And I'm just loyal to that team.
It's important. Well, it's a long-term
investor,
play.
Yeah, as an investor, you really have to have a good team, and that's what's really important. Your contractors, your agents. Yeah,
exactly. I was going to say the whole thing. I mean, I'm meeting Friday with a guy, Gary's Carpeting and L&H Painting, and I've done business with them for 3 decades.
Yeah.
So I already know what to expect.
I'll end with this question. This specific buying strategy took longer than I thought it was going to, but we covered a lot of ground. If you were a brand new investor, is a first day MLS a good strategy to hit up?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just going to answer. It really depends on the quadrant. It really does.
Okay.
It's going to be the main one in quadrant two and a sub partner in any other quadrant. Quadrant two is the main relationship driven quadrant where you're going to make relationships that are going to last for years, REO and short sale. Mm-hmm. First day listing is filled with that stuff every day. So if I was just starting in the quadrant two, that's absolutely what I do. I drive relationships to get repetitive inventory.
All right. Quadrant four, maybe not so much. Okay. Well, with that, Andrea, one more time, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they reach you?
Again, my cell phone number, 951-640-8131, or our website is mckeerealestategroup.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.